welcome to the Vivint Commissions Forum. Today we are discussing America's inefficient voting system.
Oh, jeez. There's not much to discuss other than I literally was on the verge of assaulting human beings this morning at the voting booth. I was there for 40 minutes. Did not get my vote in, and I've lost all faith in humanity. I think
this raises a question. Like, what is our civic duty? Do we need to vote, or does it need to fit into our schedule?
This is a great question. I mean, my first impression is yes, we need to vote, but it does need to fit into our schedules because
absolutely,
like. The voting poll is like open from I think 7 a.m. to 6 today. I'm not going to make it by 6. Right. So I went in the morning before work to do it, and it didn't happen after 40 minutes of trying. So I'm not voting. Right.
I'm all for inefficient, crappy voting systems. If you make this day a federal holiday.
Yes. Amen. That is a tremendous idea.
Let's take all day to vote. I don't care.
It
absolutely has to fit into our schedule. It can't be such a cluster.
You're right. And it was a joke. This, like, I was the first person there, and I failed. And as I was leaving, another person came in, and he failed as well. Like, he was like, at one point, I thought he was going to take over the voting iPad to get himself registered. They couldn't. Anyways, Dave, are you going to vote?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's all you had to contribute to the Vivint Commission's forum is a maybe?
Well, I have school today, and so I will be heading up to campus and won't get home until like 11 o'clock at night. So it may be kind of difficult. I would like to, but for instances like that, I just feel like it would be nice to be able to just, vote online or vote in some other way that doesn't require us going to stand in a long line and relying on other people to, get us into the system.
That's why they mail ballots. But the problem with mailing ballots is you have to drop it off at a specific location. And then, we're located in Provo and Orem for the most part. I guess Brian's in American Fork. But our drop-off point's at the Provo Rec Center, Dave. I don't live anywhere near that place. I never go down there.
That's not too bad. It's not too bad of a drive.
It's like 20 minutes out of my way. I would have to plan around that to do it. So it's dumb.
Hey, there's some good Pokemon Go stops and gyms down there. So
Oh my gosh.
You could, multitask.
Okay. Brian is right. Dave is wrong. It needs to fit into our schedules more, and we're gonna stop talking about voting because we need to move on to something a little more interesting.
All right. How about the NBA awards last night?
Here's a question. Should postseason be included? Should they vote after the postseason is over?
No, I don't think so.
So these are strictly regular season awards?
Yes.
Dave?
I'm kind of torn on this, right? Because, I agree that it should be a regular season award. Because if you let the postseason in, that obviously inherently gives people who, made the postseason an advantage. Or, that's not necessarily true. They may perform badly. And so, I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I do feel like, they do call it like it's the NBA Awards for the 2017-2018 season, which I feel like does include the playoffs. Just the language of the award itself seems to imply that playoffs should be included.
Brian, what would Dave's answer had been if Donovan had actually won Rookie of the Year for the Utah Jazz?
It totally would have been the
same. It's based on regular season. No!
Oh, jeez. You're absolutely right.
Well, here's the thing. I felt like Donovan, regardless, had a better regular season than Ben Simmons, and obviously had a better postseason than Ben Simmons did. But I don't know. It's such a travesty. What a disappointment.
More disappointed that he lost the award or that he got demolished in the first place voting?
Honestly, like a little bit of both. I I mean, I'm obviously a Jazz fan, so I'm extremely biased. I felt like Donovan deserved the award. I definitely felt like it should have been much closer than it was. But
it was, I mean, it was fairly close point-wise. I think it was only like a 100-point difference because Donovan basically cleaned up the second-place votes. But because the first-place votes were worth 5 points and the third-place votes were worth 3, that's where that gap kind of came from.
Yeah, I just – I don't know. It's all right, though, Donovan. There's always next year for
him. I don't mind. I think Ben Simmons deserved Rookie of the Year. What blows me away is Quinn Snyder not getting Coach of the Year.
Yes, absolutely. How can you give – I know that Toronto was first seed, which seemed like that was the only criteria they used to give him Coach of the Year. Did anyone pay attention to the fact that the East are bums? Boston was missing, you know – Kyrie played more than half the year, but they were basically down a player and a half. And Cleveland was traded their second best player. So, that, I mean, the conference's strength was diminished from the get-go. Going first in that conference is no feat, in my opinion.
See, and this is one of those instances, too, where if you include the postseason, I mean, I don't think there's any way that Dwayne Casey, you know, wins Coach of the Year. But because it's a, you know, regular season award or whatever, you know, now, I don't know. Now the media just look like even bigger idiots than they are.
I think the biggest defense of Dave's point, though, is if they're going to have the award show at the end of the playoffs, then you can include the postseason. Because in the past, they would give those awards out at the very beginning of the second round.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point, yeah, if you're going to wait till everything's over, yeah, include the postseason in it, and then, yeah, tally your votes or whatnot. I mean, it's kind of dumb that...
Can we talk about DJ Khaled plugging his own album in the middle of an award?
That was a joke. And the winner goes to, hold up. I'm dropping my new album.
Hold on.
The album's name is... That was unbelievable.
Yeah. Sorry, Ben Simmons. DJ Khaled is having a moment.
That is fantastic.
Only thing that would have made that better if that was before the MVP. And the MVP goes to, hold up.
That would have been amazing. So I didn't get to see it, but I heard that Dwayne Casey's acceptance speech was like one of the most passive-aggressive speeches that have ever been given. Where he basically threw the Toronto front office under the bus without, like, naming any names or getting too specific. Did you guys listen to that or hear that?
No. We were too busy beating you in Settlers of Catan.
Yeah. Can I just – let me just throw this out there. That was the most thorough beating I think I've ever received in Settlers. That was such a joke. Oh, my gosh. Fortune did not smile upon me last night. That was terrible.
So what's the consensus here then, Brian? Do you think they should give out the awards in the playoffs and leave it as regular season, or are they going to continue to do a show at the end of the year, and should they move to including the postseason?
I would prefer to see it sooner after regular season ends, and I don't understand why it's such a spectacle. That was insane.
Yeah.
This isn't the Oscars. These are athletes.
Right. And the thing that's weird, too, is now that you have the NBA awards, and then they're all going to be back a week from now for the ESPYs, it's just how many sports awards do we need? And is there going to be NFL awards, NHL? You know, it's like, it's just crazy. It seems a little ridiculous. And here's, I think, one of the most underrated points is by not naming the awards, it doesn't give the fans an opportunity to embrace the winners and heckle the winners as well as they go through the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Right. True. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because if Harden was named MVP and then he had a poor series against Golden State,
there would have been
a lot of discussion around that. But now it's not going to be talked about. He's the MVP and we move on to the next year. And there's no semblance of did he live up to that in the playoffs or not.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point, Matt. I mean, if you're not going to include the postseason, like you said, then there's no reason to announce the awards. If it's just based on the regular season, there's no reason to announce them at the end of the regular season. You know, I mean, the votes were already in, I believe, well before the playoffs started. So yeah, I mean, you might as well do it.
Was Harden?
I don't know.
Did you like Harden as the MVP or
no?
So you didn't like any of the awards winners?
Not really. I mean,
because I totally agree. Rudy did not deserve Defensive Player of the Year by any stretch of the imagination.
You know, there's cases to be made for Anthony Davis. He actually played the whole season, and you know, he had a
Anthony
pretty large
Davis.
Effect. I'm saying he had a huge effect of the three guys.
If anyone was Gobert. Second place, it was LeBron James.
No, wait. I'm talking about Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
No, but like just for Anthony Davis, I mean, he had a case. He played the whole season. I mean, the Jazz know full well how good he is on defense when he had like 10 blocks against the Jazz one of the last times they played. And so, I mean, he had a good case. I mean, obviously, I'm happy that Rudy won, but I think that there's a lot of controversy around really all the choices, all the picks. I mean, Ben Simmons, my goodness, like Donovan Mitchell, at least he's got a chance next year to win Rookie of the Year, apparently, since, you know, apparently that award goes to anybody for their first two seasons in the league, not just their first season. What a joke.
I'm not gonna get bent out of shape about the player of the year, the Rookie of the Year, because they both were deserving, and yeah, you're right, Ben Simmons shouldn't have been there, but he was, and he wasn't. It's not like he had a bad year. He had a great year.
No, he did have a great year. I'm just saying that Donovan should be considered next season as well.
But Donovan played this year. Ben Simmons didn't play last year. That's the.
I know, but it doesn't matter. It was still his second year in the league, which makes him not a rookie.
I agree with you, but the technicality is that he didn't play. You have an issue with the rule. That doesn't mean Donovan should be eligible
as a sophomore season. The rule's pretty dumb. No, and I agree. It's, I don't know, more of a joke. I'm actually, to be honest, and looking at it, I'm kind of glad that Donovan didn't win, because that's just going to – and the fact that, you know, Ben had so much more of the first-place vote. I mean, he's just going to play with a huge chip on his shoulder now. I think it'll drive – it's probably a good thing.
All right. Are you done?
I was just getting almost. I haven't talked nearly enough yet, Matt. So, no, I was just gonna say, like, what do you guys think of this idea? And has this happened a lot more recently? Where, I feel like the best player in the league, and maybe there's more of a case for other players, you know.
What's the idea?
Like,
come on, Dave.
LeBron James could basically win that award every
and he
season
should if he's
the
most
right?
valuable player.
and he probably has been, right? I mean, you look at the metrics, you look at the teams that he's dragged to the finals, you know, like teams that have absolutely no business being there, being in the playoffs. Like, he should have won MVP more than what? He's won it twice? Three times? Like,
he's won it four times, actually, but he's probably should have won it twice as many times as he has.
Yeah, I mean, and it just feels like, is it voter fatigue? Do we just get tired of voting for the same guy over and over?
Maybe they need to diversify the voting, include a couple coaches, some GMs, and some media members, because I think it's strictly media.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Harden, you know, he averaged the most points on the team with the most regular season wins. I just – The things that LeBron did this season, I mean, were incredible. And I don't know. I think it's – I guess it's the same with rookie. I mean, a case can be made for either of them. I just think – I think LeBron has deserved to win it a lot more than he has, and I feel like that brings up the issue of it's like, well, he's already won it once, so we can't really vote for him again, or he's won it, you know, four times, so we can't actually vote for him again. I just think that seems to be very prevalent, you know, this kind of voter fatigue.
I think,
anyways,
that, like, what does that award mean? Is it the most valuable player on their team? Is it the best
right.
player in the league? Is it the best player on the best team?
I think it's.
Well, it doesn't.
Go ahead,
I was
Matt,
just going to say it needs to be defined ultimately.
Yeah.
Because it's not right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. I mean, it seems like it stands for the best player in the league. I mean, it seems like that's kind of what good as.
in my opinion. But.
All right, last little piece. I want to get your opinion. It's BYU related. We're not going to get into college football completely because we're still a couple weeks away before it gets interesting. But BYU had their media day. I don't think there was nothing of note. There was no scheduling. There was no
nothing of note.
Stadium, baby.
I was what getting to that. About? Holy crap!
Oh, okay.
Incredible.
My bad.
I wanted to ask Brian more so than you, Dave. Does having quote NFL Wi-Fi quality, does that even register to you as being a cool thing?
Wait, what happened?
BYU stadium? Has announced that their stadium is.
Why are you asking Brian that? What a mistake!
BYU's stadium is going to be Wi-Fi equipped, NFL quality, and they're going to introduce a new app that will feed you live stats and a bunch of stuff. So, what do you think? Is that cool or is that dumb?
I love that. I think it's another way for the fans to just become more engaged.
Really? That's what you think?
If there's one thing I've seen with BYU fans, they need to be engaged. Yikes. That place is like a graveyard. Oh, man.
Give me a break, Brian. He goes to one game, and it's the most boring game of the decade, and he draws conclusions from it.
You could have heard a pin drop. 60,000 people in there, and you could have heard a pin drop. Maybe this app will wake some people up.
Oh. It's not. We're not talking about the app. The app's going to be lame. We're talking about being able to actually text people rather than being, you know, like no reception.
I've heard the opposite. Like I've heard that the fact that there's more Wi-Fi or better Wi-Fi is indicative of the athletic program just accepting BYU's mediocrity, and so this gives the fans a chance to just zone out of the game.
That's true.
When they're there,
Candy Crush second quarter.
Yep, exactly. No, I think it's cool. I think that Media Day was pretty low-key, which was to be expected after last season. It will be – I am interested to see the product that is put out on the field, though. I mean, if we've learned one thing, especially over the years, it doesn't matter what people say, Like, you kind of – need to take the wait-and-see approach. But I am cautiously optimistic that Jeff Grimes is going to turn that offense around. I'm not optimistic that our defense will be any good this next year.
All right. Glad to have Kyle back on the pod. I saw Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom with him. So I think he's a great person to bring on to talk about the film. And plus, we're both really big movie fans. We see a lot of movies. I mean, how many do we see a year? More than 30, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, that doesn't make us experts. I'm not saying that, but we are definitely...
It just makes us genuine movie fans.
Exactly. We're opinionated movie fans. And so, it'll be fun just to have a conversation because these kind of movies always generate discussion. And for the first part of this conversation, let's be spoiler-free. Just talk about our general views of the movie, and then we'll break it down in spoiler fashion for those who have seen it, and we'll see what happens. But my personal spoiler free review is I was pleasantly surprised. I remember watching the first trailer and I was really concerned that I was going to have no story and there's going to be no flow. And I was surprisingly interested in the story, and I thought the action scenes were really well done, and I thought it was really good. I would say it's one of the three best Jurassic Park movies, which isn't saying much because there's only five, but it wasn't a dud. That's my point.
Yeah, I don't think I was ever really concerned that it wasn't going to have a story, because all of the Jurassic World or Park films, or like the whole franchise, every movie has had a really good story. I think it's been, the dinosaurs, plus there's been some other underlying story behind it. And I think they've always done a good job of that. So I wasn't too concerned with that. I just had no idea what the story was going to be.
Right.
I think I was pleasantly surprised as well. In in certain aspects of it. But as far as, you know, when we get into the spoilers and stuff, I might change my tune a teeny bit, but I don't know. I don't know what all I can say about, I mean, if you're comparing it to other Jurassic Park movies,
compare it specifically to Jurassic World. I think that's the most fair comparison.
Yeah, that's true. I think that Jurassic World definitely was more exciting and entertaining for me, because I had no idea what to expect. And even though you knew the trailer said, you know, yes, they have, you know, this new dinosaur that they bred, like, but at the same time, it was something that had never happened. Like, yeah, they were in the island, but it was like, it was a functioning park, which you had never seen before. It was like,
right,
they were gonna try the park, but then, you know, things went to crap real quick before anything could ever get started. And so that's what I thought was so exciting about the first one. This one, I mean, I appreciate that they really just jumped right into it right afterwards.
That opening scene was legit. That's, yeah. I think that's the best opening of a Jurassic Park movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That opening scene was really, really good. So again, no spoilers right now, but
right.
Yeah, the whole movie really opened it up for more of a story to be told. I think that, you know, obviously it's a massive franchise. They're always going to have good writers and find a way to extend it, because that's the world we live in, is if it's going right. to make money, they're always going to keep pushing it and pushing it.
Yes.
But I think the underlying story, and I don't think this is a spoiler at all, but, you know, the last two films has really kind of been that Dr. Wong or whatever. Is it Dr. Wong? Is that what it's
I can't remember his character's name, but he was if you remember from the first one, he was the scientist who created Indominus Rex.
Yeah. And that, you know, he was also in the very, very first Jurassic Park movie as one of the scientists when he was super young before he was.
I don't remember that. I can't believe I never made that connection.
Oh, dude, you have what?
I know. I'm
dude.
You're breaking news here.
this is very old news. This is 20-year-old news.
I had no idea he was in the original Jurassic Park. Dude, shame on me.
You have to go back into the original first when John Hammond first brings him into like the lab, and you know they see the raptor eggs and stuff, and like Dr. Grant starts asking about, you know, how they, you know, with the female DNA and all that stuff. And there's this Asian doctor that's, you know, answering these basic questions and stuff. And that's the same guy.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, that makes that storyline more interesting to me all of a sudden. I think yeah. you just elevated my opinion of the Jurassic Worlds. Cause they do a great job of connecting the original Jurassic Park to these movies, which is something I appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, they still talk about, you know, John Hammond in this new movie, as well as, you know, his business partner, I guess, when they first started it up. Like, you didn't really hear anything. I don't think that you ever heard anything about, like, an old business partner in the past, but it makes sense that he would have something like that.
Right.
But I like the, I think it's Dr. Hong, but I, or Wong, I don't remember for sure, but I like how.
I'll look it up right now as you keep expressing.
Yeah. But he, you know, in. He kind of becomes a bit of a greed. I don't know if greedy is the right word, because I don't know if it's necessarily for money. It seems more like he's hungry to, you know, have scientific breakthroughs within dinosaurs. Like, you know, it was such a massive breakthrough initially with them being able, and him being one of the main scientists and, right. you know, guys in the lab, and then, you know, them cooking up the Indominus Rex in Jurassic World, and then, you know, this other
Indoraptor. And the worst dinosaur name in the series by far, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I can see why they called it that, because it's kind of like, I think it's, you know, kind of, they're going off of the Indominus Rex, but it's also a raptor. So I think that's why they call it the Indo. I could be wrong.
It though. Seems that's like there was a lack of creativity there, you know?
Yeah.
Because I remember when Jurassic World came out, Indominus Rex wasn't a very well-liked name, but the Indoraptor is making Indominus Rex look like a creative stroke of genius.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. So,
and by the way, it's Dr. Wu, not Dr. Wong.
Wu, dang it. But yeah, Dr. Wu, I think he's going to continue to be a part of the franchise for a while. You know what's going to be interesting? I wonder how he is. You got to imagine he's going to get eaten up by one of his creations at some point,
right?
So
maybe, for the sake of the franchise, though, they don't do that, because that seems to be such a common theme where, you know. And maybe this is the moment where we're going into the spoiler zone. So if you haven't seen it, stop listening, skip to the end, whatever you want to do. But starting now, we're getting into the spoilers. And for the final time, you've been warned. So if you're not paying attention, shame on you. But the franchise loves to have dinosaurs rip villains in half. That happens in this one.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe it would be nice in the next Jurassic World movie for that not to happen, you know, maybe for him to die another way. Maybe Chris Pratt kills him. I don't know. You know, I'm not a screenwriter, but that is seemingly the most often used type of death for villain characters in these movies.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It happened in the first one with who was the big fat guy that was trying to steal the embryos.
I can't remember his name. I don't.
And then in the second one, you have the bald guy who's trying to, you know, have his king trophy of a T-Rex ends up getting eaten by the T-Rex baby at the end.
Exactly. Yep. It happens in this one. And that was one of my least favorite parts of the movie, is I felt like there could have been, I would have preferred that the Indoraptor takes him down rather than the classic, oh, you think he's alive, and then a dinosaur comes in out of nowhere and rips him in half. Like, it just wasn't, there wasn't for me a great emotional payoff for his death.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was, okay, we need to, let's try and backtrack a little bit.
You're right.
Spoilers. Like, sorry, go ahead.
No, what were you going to ask?
I was going to say, give me a spoiler that you were, like, really happy with, and a spoiler that you were like, nah, I wish that wasn't there.
Okay, well, the first question is harder to answer than the second question. All right,
well, give me the second one.
Immediately what comes to mind is what I hated the most in the story was that they cloned a human being. And I just felt that was a little far-reaching for the Jurassic Park movies. I mean, that's really a whole nother world. I mean, you could build a whole nother story off of, you know, genetic cloning of human beings. I don't feel like that belongs in a Jurassic Park movie. I really didn't like that. And they didn't do a good job of building it up or really giving you any explanation. I mean, the only conclusion I can draw is that that's going to be the central theme of the third movie. And tracking down the dinosaurs who have escaped the mansion. Those are the only two logical conclusions. But I felt distracted by that storyline when there was a better storyline that was unfolding. So, that's what I disliked the most in the movie. It wasn't distracting enough to where I didn't like the movie. I liked the movie, but that was one part that held me back from really liking the movie, you know?
Yeah, I honestly agree with you. I think that right there was like, it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like,
right.
And again, these are spoilers, so stop listening if you haven't seen it. Shame on you if you've gotten this far and you're upset about it.
Exactly. I don't want to hear any. Don't but at there's, me, as they like to say.
So John Hammond, I can't remember his name, but he basically has like this old partner that was a part of, you know, the whole like park thing, or not necessarily the park, but like basically discovering how to create dinosaurs based on, you know, the dinosaur DNA that you extract from the mosquito blood.
And the character was played by James Cromwell. And I'm looking for his, I'm going to get his character name because it's important to, okay, it was Benjamin Lockwood.
Yeah.
I think it was so, Dr. Lockwood.
Dr. Lockwood, yeah. So he's this older guy that's kind of dying, and then he has like this it's not even a relative, it's more like a trustee of the business, basically. This guy who ends up being, you know, greedy and wants to sell a bunch of stuff, but suddenly there's like this granddaughter, and the story is that Dr. what's his name again?
Dr. Lockwood.
Dr. Lockwood. It's like suddenly he has this granddaughter, and the story is that his daughter was killed in a car accident or something. And, you know, his daughter, his granddaughter's like, did I look like my mom? And he's like, it's like you were a spitting image of her. And right. Then there were like these little clips that kept, you would like almost see a picture of her mom, but then you wouldn't see a picture of it. And like, I'm like, okay, so who is this significant person that is this girl's mom? Like, is it one of the characters from a previous movie? Like, right. What's going on with this? And then suddenly it's like an exact replica of the girl. And it's yep. like, he never had a daughter. He never had a granddaughter. He cloned her. And you're like, wait a second. Like, it just came out of nowhere. Like, it came yeah. out of left field. It was just kind of like, this was a dinosaur story. This was about rescuing dinosaurs and preventing the illegal sale of, like, weaponized dinosaurs. And then suddenly it's like, oh, by the way, this guy cloned his daughter.
Right. I didn't mind how she was the one who let the dinosaurs out, because at first when the door opens, I was like, oh my gosh, it's Bryce Dallas Howard's. I can't remember her name either. I don't know why I don't remember anyone's names, but when I first thought it was her like female coworker who was the one who saved Blue, and I was like, oh, give me a break. Like,
oh yeah.
So I was glad that there was some connection to her letting the animals loose. But overall, I just didn't like the story. I would have preferred it to be Lockwood's granddaughter. And I don't know, you know, like, had she let them loose and still not been a clone, it would have been fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least for me, like, had she let them loose and she was just a regular human being, I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, like, why did she do that? You know? So.
Yeah. So I wonder if, you know, the next movie, because, you know, there's a little teaser at the end of it where, like, a pterodactyl lands on, you know, in Las Vegas. And, you know, obviously the dinosaurs are kind of spreading out across, you know, not obviously not major, major distances, but, you know, probably more across the U.S.
Yeah.
And the...
By the way, hold on. Before we go any further, that was the worst tease.
Oh, it was horrible.
That I've ever waited. And you know what? I'm blaming Marvel for this. Marvel has set this expectation that if you're a big franchise, you have to have a tease at the end of a movie, and I hate it.
Yeah.
And half of the Marvel ones are crap too. Like,
yeah, that's true. I think if you're going to have a tease, like, make it at least somewhat, I don't know, really give someone something to look forward to. Have it be like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Like, I can't believe, like, like, seeing a pterodactyl perch up in Las Vegas isn't like, oh my gosh, they're in Vegas. Like,
right, right. It wasn't like, I can't wait. You were just like, oh, I wasted my time for this. And that's the other thing. Yeah. If you are going to do a tease, can we do it in the middle of the credits rather than having to sit through 10, yes. sometimes 15 minutes of credits for that crap?
Oh my God. Yeah.
I have taken a stance, and I'm holding true to this for the foreseeable future, that I am not going to sit for a tease. I'm just going to wait till it leaks online, because I want that time back in my life.
Yeah, you know you're going to see the tease. Like, you can probably look up that tease the moment you walk out of the theater. You'll probably see it before the people who are waiting for the credits to end.
Exactly. In a day and age of social media, that tease is not going to make it very long before it hits YouTube or something. And that's when I'm going to watch it. Cause so if you haven't seen it and you're still listening to this, shame on you, double shame on you. But if there's anything to take away from having the movie completely spoiled at this point, don't stay for the tease.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
To answer your first question though, a spoiler that I liked is, I really liked how the Indoraptor got loose. Like, it was no surprise that the Indoraptor got loose from the trailers. And we'll get to that. And that's a whole nother discussion, how the trailer really ruined. But I thought it was clever how the Indoraptor got out of the cage, because like the last thing I wanted to see was, oh, we made the dinosaur more powerful than it was before and it got out. Like,
yeah,
that's happened so many times. I don't want that again. I thought it was really clever how they had the greedy dinosaur hunter, and he just was an idiot, you know.
Yeah,
and also kind of showed the intelligence of the Indoraptor to kind of play into his hands. I just thought it was going to be some corny, oh, you know, whoops, everyone was running away and someone shot the lock off or something. But this was a little more thought out than that, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think that the Indoraptor, like the whole thing with the raptors, like their main thing throughout the franchise is how smart they are.
Right.
You know, how intelligent they are. They can open doors. They're pack hunters. They can basically, you know, in the third movie wasn't fantastic by any means. I personally liked it, but, you know, there's a big thing about the raptors and how they communicate with each other and how they can set up traps like their prey and stuff like that.
Yep.
So I thought that, you know, because they basically are, you know, use the raptor DNA and like that, you know, how else are you going to program a weaponized dinosaur? But, you know, you have to use raptor stuff for that. And so, yeah, I thought that was
it wasn't just raptor stuff, though. I think it's blue. Blue was.
Yeah, for sure.
Blue
is extremely unique, but I think that there were definitely raptors in the past that probably had that same level of intelligence. They just hadn't experienced that, you know, from a child,
right?
As like a dog kind of thing. You know what? Like,
yeah,
when something is that smart, you can train it when it's a baby. I just don't think that the people that had the dinosaurs in the first movie, like, even though they had them as babies, I don't think they ever once thought, "Hey, let's train this thing."
Yeah.
So. Yes, I agree with you, though. I thought that was really clever.
What about for you? What's a part of the movie that you weren't anticipating that you ended up really liking? Why you think? Let me chime in, because I thought that in this particular franchise, I think there were some of the greatest moments. This is a hot take. But I think some of the greatest scenes in the history of Jurassic Park were from this movie. And
you're talking about...
I'm talking about all five movies. Yes.
Okay.
I loved the blue flashback scenes. I was so happy that wasn't spoiled in the trailers, because those were... They brought a real human element, and you can understand kind of Chris Pratt's... his attraction to Blue from understanding how much time and discovery went into that character. I thought those flashbacks were fantastic, and they were most heartwarming scenes in the entire franchise. I loved them.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then
go ahead.
No, you go.
No, I just one particular thing about that, you know, the flashback scene when he's working with Blue. You know, Blue was definitely more the alpha when it came to the group.
Yeah.
And then Chris Pratt became the alpha over Blue, but it was kind of a process. And I thought
right.
It was cool how initially when, you know, he was doing this test where Chris Pratt would show like fear or sadness or something, and then Blue would try and attack him because he was weak. And then after Blue accepted him as the alpha, he acted like he was sad or crying or something, and Blue literally went over to comfort him. And so I thought that was really interesting. And I think the reason why it's even more interesting is because I have a puppy right now that I've been training and doing basic stuff with. Obviously it's not a freaking raptor. It's not that relatable, but you know, dogs are really similar in that way when it comes to, you know, having an alpha of a pack and, you know, having like that kind of trust and stuff. So I thought that was really cool how it, like you said, showed the history with Blue and the strength of the connection that he had with her.
My other, this is my final, two quick things. We don't have to go into this, but I mentioned earlier, the opening scene was fantastic. It was super intense. It was the best opening scene in any of the Jurassic movies. It really set the tone. It was That's something I loved about the movie. It's just right from the get-go, you were into the thick of it. But the other scene that I loved was a very sad scene when the boat was pulling away from Isla Nublar and you saw the Brontosaurus kind of die as, you know, one of the last living dinosaurs on the planet. It was just, it was so well done. I think even though we don't have attachment to dinosaurs as human beings, I know that there's certainly a curiosity with them, but we don't love them like we do a dog, for instance, or a cat.
Yeah.
But you really, I don't know, there was a real, what's the word I want to use? There was significant sorrow. I don't know. I didn't cry in the scene, but they did a great job of portraying the kind of sadness of that event.
Yeah.
And to have those emotions for, you know, for animals that we've never been around. I don't know. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. And it was like, they dragged it out, but it was better that way because, you know, it was kind of this slow scene where this Brontosaurus was like basically being engulfed in, you know, smoke, and you knew that the lava was flowing and everything like that. And it was just kind of like, even you could tell in the dinosaur, like it knew that time was up for it. And, you know, there was nothing that anybody could do about it. It was just like this really sad moment. And, you know, it was kind of this slow, like pulling away of the boat. And it was definitely an emotional scene. So I think they did a great job with that.
Do you have any other moments from the movie that you thought were really well done?
I thought that it was, you know, you see a little bit of this scene. I didn't really know what it was for based on the trailer. I'm mad that any part of a lot of these things were in the trailer, but we'll get to that in a second. But I thought it was really interesting how, you know, Blue, the dinosaur, the raptor ends up getting shot and they are having a hard time keeping her alive and they have to do a blood transfusion. And there's only like two other carnivores that are on this ship that's sailing away and they have to basically steal blood from a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And I thought that was really interesting how they get a blood transfusion from a T-Rex in a little, you know, like shipping container kind of thing that they're in. So I thought that was a really creative scene.
And this is a perfect transition into how the trailer really damaged the movie, because that would have been so sweet and intense.
Yeah.
Except for the trailer, you see him roll out of it. So you already know that there's no chance of death here.
Yep.
And that was one of three scenes that off the top of my head, I'm so bummed that I didn't, because in that opening scene, there was significant tension and it was intense.
The best.
And
sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that same tension didn't exist in that scene and it could have, but it was spoiled in the trailer.
The best scenes in any movie are when you really have no idea what's going to happen. Like, thing, and you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you know that everyone involved is going to end up okay. You saw, or because of, and you know,
right.
It takes away from the intensity of it. And so like, you know, we've spent a good chunk of time talking about this, but for you listening, like, if I had watched that movie without having seen a trailer for this film, I would have loved the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because like I like the movie and I appreciate it, but I didn't have the same cinematic experience.
Right.
If I, you know, like I kind of compared it to A Quiet Place. Like, it obviously they're not the same movie. One of them's more of a thriller and borderline horror film, but like I had no idea what I was getting into with that movie. I even though I had seen a trailer, but you gotta leave a little bit to the imagination, or else it's like, yeah, that was entertaining, but it wasn't like, holy cow, that was, you know, it could have been so much more intense. Like with the Indoraptor when it was like going after the clone girl and stuff, like. Those scenes
Like,
would have been so much more intense if I didn't know.
Did we need to know in the trailer that Blue was going to come into the room and help save the girl and Chris Pratt? No, we didn't need to know that. You know, like, We didn't even need to know that they ever got off the island. They could have made a great trailer of them on the island trying to rescue the dinosaurs, and that's what you think the movie is. And then, lo and behold, you find out the movie, you know, there's this group that you think is saving the dinosaurs, but really they're selling them off to make money. Like, that would have been a nice twist, but we never were allowed that because, you know, whoever determined how they were going to market this movie, they just did a terrible job. It's disappointing, and you know, I really have no one to blame but myself, because I know that trailers have been ruining movies for years, and yet I still watch them. So when am I going to learn?
We're not going to learn. We've gone over this hundreds of times, and it's just not going to happen. But I don't know, man. I feel like some of the movies that do the best in the box office are the ones that really don't give away the story, and then they just, you know, it's more of a word of mouth kind of thing where it's just like, oh my gosh, did you see this movie? But unfortunately, it's more about like, you know, they give up so much in the trailer to try and entice more people to go see it on opening weekend. It seems like it's more about breaking box office records in the first weekend than it is about anything else.
I'll close with this. We went on a lot longer than we thought we would, which is a good sign, because I think this has been an interesting conversation. There's so much to break down with this movie. We could probably go for another half hour.
But probably. There's a lot of – I mean, and it's not a discouragement from anyone going to see it, because there's a lot more in the movie that we didn't discuss that's still high-quality entertainment. And if you have not seen the trailer for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, go see the movie and don't watch the trailer, and you're going to have a good time.
And forget everything we said up until this point.
Dang it. Oh, man, should have said this at the beginning.
Yes, but, you know, I remember you didn't go with me, so you didn't have this experience, and maybe a movie comes to mind for you. But in December of 2016, I saw the movie La La Land, and I had only seen one trailer before, and I knew it was a musical, but I had no idea what the movie was about. And I saw it before the hype train took off, and I loved the movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the decade. And that's largely because I had no idea what it was, and I had no expectations. I was able to go in and really watch the movie with zero preconceived notions. And that's just so rare when it happens. It's such a delight. And I'm sure that if I watched La La Land today, I wouldn't like it nearly as much because of everything that happened, but It's just a shame that we don't get to have that experience more often, because we're bombarded with reviews and trailers and all kinds of crap that make it so you can't just fully enjoy the experience.
You know, it's something that we should probably do is, and for those of you listening, I think this would be a good idea for any of you, if you feel the same as we do about trailers, like pick a movie that's coming out in the next like 3 or 4 months that you haven't seen a trailer for yet, and commit to not watching a trailer before you see the movie.
It's a great idea. We need to look at what's coming out during award season.
Yeah.
And commit to not watching a trailer. I think it's a great idea. And just going opening night before the reviews are out, before the social media is out, no trailer, just go in and see it and see what we think. I think that's a great idea.
All right. We'll have to do a podcast on that and see kind of what the experiences. I imagine it's going to be a good experience. It'd be kind of funny if it like backfired and like that was the worst movie I've ever seen.
Well, let's do it and we'll give our opinion on it. So I think that's a great idea. And then for you listeners, if you've seen the movie, feel free to give us your thoughts on Twitter. And if you listen to the Anchor app, you can leave messages and we'll play those on our next movie review podcast. I love the app. I think I'm a huge Anchor fan. I love how you can interact. So we'd love to hear what you have to think. I think we both give it what? B plus? B plus is probably a little high. B minus?
Yeah, I would say in the mid to low B range for this film.
Yeah. I agree. Well, thanks for coming on, and you'll be back on soon as we preview NBA free agency, which is right around the corner.
Yikes. I'm scared, but it's coming soon.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. Have a good one, and we'll talk soon.
You too, man. See ya.
Yep, see ya.